Okay, I'll call it at 6 o'clock. I'll call the meeting to order. I believe we have everyone present, and I'd like to welcome, let's see, Arjun Kumar and Kayla Mitchell. So welcome. Do we have any citizens' comments this evening? No citizens' comments? Okay, we'll move on to chair and committee members' comments. Again, I'd just like to welcome Youth and Governance. If you have any questions, you're not sure about something, if we use too many acronyms, just don't be afraid to speak up and say, I have no idea what that means. We're all here to help you make this a very pleasant experience, so please let me know how I can help, and Vice Chair Andy Berg, and then the rest of the group.
Do you want to introduce everyone?
Sure.
Everyone
let me go around. I'm Chairman Laura Belsky.
Andy Berg, District 10.
I'm Kim Lewis, District 23.
I'm Kathy Duberstein, an Administrative Assistant for Human Services Department. So I take the minutes, I email you, and all that good stuff.
Now we have a face to the name. I'm Erin Decker, County Board Supervisor, District 22.
I'm Dave Celebrate, District 5.
Oh, I'm Kayla Mitchell, Youth and Governance Member.
I'm Arjun Kumar, also a Youth and Governance Member.
And Jerry Gully, District 16.
And I'm District 4. So, welcome. Supervisor Berg, I know that you had some comments that you wanted to bring up.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up some of the discussion that I've had. I've been talking with Rogers Behavioral Health for about 2 years now. They're a behavioral health or mental health hospital, I guess, if you want to say. Talks have been going pretty well. We're to the point, last week I met with their foundation vice president, and I'm meeting with their COO this week, and kind of finding out what the total dollar amount will be for them. They're pretty confident with wanting to come here, but they're going to need some community stake holdership in this, some financial side of it. Such as, like many hospitals, you know, you get two kinds of hospitals. Some that, you know, they fund everything themselves to begin with, and then there's other hospitals where they look for the community buy-in, community financial stake side of it, and that's what they're going to be looking for from us. And we're looking around the $10 to $15 million range, and then they would be taking on the sustainment of that afterwards. But that would be a minimum of 27 beds, which is what we've been looking for IMD purposes. We're looking at residential inpatient, which is kind of like detox and detox to include their further continuum of care, which is PHP and IOP, which is partial hospitalization, which is 6 hours a day, and IOP, which is intensive outpatient, which is 3 hours a day. So they've got a long history of being in Kenosha, or not Kenosha, but Wisconsin, 114 years in Oconomowoc, yeah. They have only three other facilities in the whole country that have residential, and that's West Allis, Oconomowoc, and Brown Deer, but they're in many large cities throughout the country, to include Seattle, Chicago, Skokie, Illinois, Atlanta, San Diego, a whole slew of other ones, Tampa, I believe. So kind of keep talking to them, and hopefully soon they'll be moving in.
I think it would be helpful. I know when in judiciary and law, we talked about the additional expenses of having to transport for the sheriff's department, transport mentally ill, and even detox, sometimes over 8 hours, 8 to 9 hours away. So it might be good to gather some of that information to show.
Yeah, you know, so I have started talking to providers here in the county that either do detox or psychiatrists that can't find beds, or even detox, you know, there's detox situations where they're sending Kenosha residents to Minneapolis. In fact, there's a facility in Minneapolis, they literally named the hall Kenosha because they get so many of our patients are so many of our residents that they've named it the Kenosha Hall. So
administration has those reports, so I think they'd be very helpful. So great, let us know how we can help. Mm-hmm. Any comments? Does anybody else have any? Yes.
Is there only one place for detox? Is that the only place for detox?
In Kenosha?
Yeah.
I don't even know where our detox. Anybody have an answer to that?
Do you know where it is?
Our resources are limited. It depends on how a facility is licensed, and there are very few that are local or nearby. I'm not on the adult side, but I'm just going to, my comment is don't forget about our youth, because our youth also need inpatient stays.
They take youth.
And May was our busiest month on record this year. We typically see about 15 youth that go into institutionalized stay, and we saw that in May alone. I just wrapped up with the 15th kiddo going in already. So it's been busy.
You see 15 youth a year normally? Is that what you meant?
Yeah. Okay. And I've seen it already as of May.
I would just add that I know with regard to adults and Chapter 51's involuntary commitments, there is nothing here in town for that. So they take them either to Racine if there's an outside possibility, or sometimes, at least in juveniles as well, they take them to Racine or Washington County as well, just for detentions. Those are, and then as I say, Chapter 51s or involuntary commitments, those are out of county as well. The town or Kenosha County as a whole has needs that you're currently using to subsidize the Kenosha branch, if you will, elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. So worthwhile. Let us know how we can help.
Absolutely. They're looking at this American Recovery Act, so see what kind of money we can get from that.
And maybe you look at the city ponying up some money too. Any other comments? Okay, let's move on to approval of minutes. Kathy, minutes as of what date?
May 3rd.
I'll go ahead and make the motion to approve minutes of May 3rd.
A second.
All in Youth and Governance, aye.
Aye.
Rest of the group?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Thank you. We'll move on to resolution to appoint Supervisor Andy Berg to the Kenosha County Human Services Board. Kathy?
Kathy is going to be reading all of these resolutions, so wish me luck. I made a cheat sheet. Resolution to appoint Supervisor Andy Berg to serve on the Human Services Board. Supervisor Berg will be filling a vacancy on the board. He is District 10's County Board Supervisor. He's the Vice Chair of the Human Services Committee, the Chair of the Legislative Committee, and serves on the Public Works Committee. So he is here tonight if you have any questions for him, but we do ask for your approval on this appointment.
Any questions? Do we have a motion for approval?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor? Or Youth and Governance?
I will first say I'm abstaining.
Okay. Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Rest of the group?
Aye.
Aye.
Resolution passes.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Welcome. We'll meet you next Monday. Oh, no, we won't yet.
Resolution number 6. Kathy?
Resolution to appoint Ms. Pauline Lorenz to serve on the Kenosha County Commission on Aging and Disability Services. She will be replacing Daniel Nurr. Ms. Lorenz has received extensive training on assistive technology through the state WISTEC program, which will allow her to share new and current information to benefit seniors. And we ask for your approval of this appointment. And she is also in attendance this evening.
Are there any questions? Do we have a motion?
I'll make that motion to approve.
Second.
Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Rest of the group?
Aye.
Aye.
Resolution passes. Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Okay, I do not see that the next two are not here, so I'll go through what
Resolution
I have.
Resolution 7.
Resolution to appoint Ms. Julie Fries to serve on the Kenosha County Commission on Aging and Disability Services. She will be replacing Carol Schoffel. Ms. Fries is involved with the University of Wisconsin-Madison funding contributions hospice contributions, a volunteer for Kenosha County Division of Aging, Disability and Behavioral Services, and the Giving Fund of Fidelity Investments. She has extensive research experience, technology expertise, training, and professional development experience, and we ask for your approval of this appointment, but I do not see that she's present.
Okay.
I'll move it.
Second.
Supervisor Gulley, Supervisor Burke, Youth and Governance.
Aye.
Aye.
Vice Speaker.
Aye.
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 Resolution passes. Resolution number 8.
All right, resolution to appoint Ms. Leah Blau to serve on the Board of Administrative Appeals. Ms. Blau will be succeeding Laura Fox on the board. She is a board member of the Kenosha County Mental Health AODA Committee, the Kenosha County Multi-Use Committee, and was a former Kenosha County Board Supervisor for District 12 from 2014 to 2018, and we ask for your approval on this appointment.
Any questions? If not, do I have a motion?
Motion to approve.
Second. Supervisor Berg, seconded by Supervisor Lewis. Youth and Governance.
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Any, let's see, resolution passes.
Thank you. And then, Lori, you have all the resolutions to be signed before we go.
Okay, I'll pass those around.
Sure.
Number 8, presentation on Veterans Treatment Court, presented by Oscar Rodriguez.
You guys ready for me? Or?
Sure, have a seat.
All right. Oh, come on. You guys want me to sit over here?
Sure.
It doesn't matter?
It doesn't matter, but you might as well sit with us.
All right, I'm Oscar Rodriguez. Work for the Kenosha County Veterans Service Office. Just a little bit about myself. From Kenosha, went to high school at Tremper, and then I joined the Marine Corps. Was on active duty from 2004 to 2008. It's the only branch you should join, Andy. after that, I got out and moved back to Wisconsin, and then went to school for a little bit, and then I started working up in Milwaukee at the VA regional office as a VSO, and then Ollie got to come work for Ollie, so that's where I'm at now. So now I'm part of the Veterans Treatment Court, the second judicial district for Veterans Treatment Court. I've been involved with that for, I would say at least 4 years now. Pretty solid 4 years. So I'm going to give a presentation on that. I have pamphlets for everybody that are basically, if you see, you know, in this pamphlet, you're going to see it's kind of like some of the slides. I didn't put all, we do have a regular presentation, but that's like 40 slides, so I wouldn't do that to you guys. So, but our mission is to honor our veterans by restoring them to be productive and healthy to healthy lives through judicial support, evidence-based treatment, peer veteran support, and supervision, thereby enhancing our public safety. So our court is a collaborative effort with our counties. So we have Kenosha County, Racine, and Walworth. And, you know, we work with the circuit court, the district attorney's office, the public defender's office, Department of Corrections, and then our U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, the State of Wisconsin Veterans Affairs, our county veteran service offices like ours, Kenosha County's, law enforcement, community providers, and human services. So for our veterans, there is an eligibility requirement. You have to be from Kenosha, Racine, or Walworth. You obviously had to serve in the United States, one of the branches. You had to have been diagnosed with a substance abuse or a treatable mental health disorder. And the other part, obviously for the court part, you have to have a pending misdemeanor or felony level offense from the Second Judicial District that only carries a minimum sentence of 18 to 24 months of community supervision, and that is approved by the district attorney's office from which it was charged from. So if it was charged in Kenosha, Racine, or Walworth. And then eligibility benefits through the Department of Veterans Affairs is not required. We do have veterans that are not VA eligible, and what I mean by VA eligible, they are not, they don't get eligible health care benefits or benefits that they would through the VA, like mental health services and stuff like that, or like medical services. But at that point, the community or county comes in and they have services that they provide for them on that.
Could I ask in what case they wouldn't?
Well, so basically, okay, you don't have to have an honorable discharge to be in the court, but so some veterans don't have honorable discharges, so they don't meet the requirements for VA health purposes, so they're not going to be eligible for the VA side of it.
I see. Okay.
So at that point, they're going to be getting care or services through, you know, community services, like for mental health and stuff like that. I want to say we have Oakwood. So we'll send veterans there. So since they are not eligible for VA purposes.
Okay.
So our goal for our court is to reduce criminal recidivism, reduce criminalization of mental health illness and the extended of incarceration among veterans. We want to obviously facilitate participating in sobriety, improve their health and their well-being, increase their treatment services, and increase access to VA benefits if applicable. So, you know, those are, you know, pretty big goals that we try to, you know, to hit on. So this is actually going to be my last slide, and then I'm going to move into some parts that I want to talk about. So we've had, as a program as a whole, is 43 graduates and then 12 Kenosha County graduates. Since our inception of the court, which started in November of 2012, actually Ollie helped launch that. And then because he used to be the Racine County Veterans Service Officer and then came to Kenosha, and then I came to Kenosha and I came aboard, and then I took over the program as a coordinator, mentor. Our program initially, for the first 4 years of the program, it was funded by grant funds. So for the first 4 years, and then that ran out. So then as a county, from our levy dollars, you know, the county pays for it. It's about $350 per veteran that's in the court, and we allow about 10 veterans for Kenosha County. As of current, right now, we've had actually two graduates. And right now, as of right now, with what we got pending, we have two pending to come into our court, and then we have one actual Kenosha County veteran. You know, the court, you know, as far as Kenosha County goes, obviously, we'd like to, you know, I'd like to see more veterans that are eligible to come into court. I know that the program works. I can speak of a specific veteran now who, and I won't give his name, but he went through the program and he was, you know, going through the toughest of times. And he came into our program, was a successful graduate, and, you know, he has children, and before he didn't have any kind of custody with his children. And as of now, he's got full custody of his children. He's successful job in the community right here in Kenosha, and he, you know, he can speak for himself. Like, you know, if I could have him here, he'd probably come, but just for that goes to show that the program does work. However, you know depending on the charges, you do have to serve at least 18 to 24 months of being on supervision, but the program is designed to work as long as the person or the veteran is, you know, willing to commit to the program. It's an extensive program. We ask a lot for these veterans. There's a lot of things that they have to do that to get them started and get their thinking right of sobriety. And I think that's the biggest piece, is once they are on the right track of wanting to be sober, these programs that we, you know, put them in and things that they are asked to do. At first, some of them are like, why would I have to do that? Why am I going to do that? I'm a grown man. I'm a grown woman. But this is the part that they're not thinking. They're not thinking straight because they're not thinking the sobriety part. And once they realize that, hey, you know, these things are for me to help me become a better person, to become sober, and then they become more clear, level-headed, they realize that these are just simple, regular tasks that are nothing. But and then once they come through that cloud and they realize these are just simple tasks that they can do, and it goes back to our service, you know. We get a mission, we get a task, we try our best to accomplish that mission, and we come through that and become, you know, they become a better person for our society and our community. And once they see that, you know, that there are things that they would make a big deal about is nothing, and they come out of it in a positive way, and then they just realize, because the mind thinking isn't there until they're clear and sober, and that they realize, hey, that was nothing. It was, you know, nothing that not different that they wouldn't have done from service that they couldn't do now. And the part is, you know, obviously getting sober.
So how long is a typical veteran in your program?
So it's 18 to 24 months.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah. And
is that concurrent with whatever?
So they'll do. There's a plea. There's everything that they have to go through to get into our court, and then, you know, some of these, you know, cases they could be sitting in jail for, you know, if they get convicted, you know, go through all this the court process, they could be sitting in jail for a long time, depending on how many counts that they have, and if they're successful and graduating our program, I mean, it keeps them. Especially, you know, any veterans with mental health, we keep them out of jail and getting the services that they need, and keeping them, you know, I guess the goal is not we don't want to lock up veterans when there could be, you know, substantial treatment that they could get on the outside that wouldn't be doing them any good in the inside.
So this is in lieu of what the court would impose.
Right.
Okay.
And you help them with housing?
So the housing benefit, there's assets for housing, depending on, again, we got to, some veterans qualify for certain things, but there's within the community, and then there's stuff with the Department of Veterans Affairs that we can help them with for housing.
Yes.
I have a question. You said the program started in 2012, and you've got 43 graduates of the entire program.
Yep.
Have there been others who started it and haven't come out in the past 8 years or so?
So you mean like they have failed the program?
Well, I don't know if medical reasons or what.
So no, we've had. I mean, there's a lot of folks that aren't. There's more than 43 people that have been in the program. However, not all of them have made it through the program successfully. So, and if that part doesn't happen, then they fall back into the regular criminal justice system, and then they go through their process of, you know.
So what percentage graduates?
What's that?
What percentage graduates?
As far as, well, we've had 43. I don't know the exact percentage of graduates, but I would say it's pretty high for the most part.
Well, it said 43 graduates, so I'm assuming the pool is bigger than that.
Yeah, right? It's way bigger than that, but I don't remember.
I would say roughly you might have maybe two or three that get terminated from the program per year.
Per year, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, look at the possibility. This program started back in 2012 and successfully graduated 43 individuals. But some people make, you know, their decisions not to go through it. You know, they're going to hold them accountable. It's not, even though it's an alternative to incarceration, you want to make sure they remain drug-free and alcohol-free and live up to all the standards that is set in the program. So.
And does the program end once they're deemed graduated, or do you keep in contact?
So basically, when they graduate, they still have to finish out some of their supervision, and then they're still in contact with. So we have a parole officer that deals with our veterans, and once they get onto, it's like a limited supervision. They'll finish out with them, And then what we're trying to do with any of our vet, our, like for Kenosha County, I just reach out to our veterans to see how they're doing. That's why I can speak of, you know, our veterans for Kenosha. But we try to still keep in contact. And again, go back to not everybody's going to graduate from this program. Again, you got to think you're dealing with, you know, with the addiction part. And, you know, that's the biggest part for them to overcome. And, you know, that gives them their thinking that they're not going to make it through this program. And they just give, you know, they give into, you know, they're obviously they're not ready to be sober at that point. So.
Yeah, I have a question.
Go ahead.
Please. So is there like a certain amount of like, say like you say misdemeanors and felonies, are there a certain amount that they could have like that they wouldn't be able to get into the program, or they like?
Yeah, so basically we're looking at misdemeanors and felonies, but like if you have like a, we're not allowing like sex offenders in there, it's got to, you know, and then for like for example DUIs, if you have like your fourth DUI, you're not getting in the court. So it depends on the level of your felony as well, but the court, you know, as a whole, we have a team, and we sit down and we vet the process to see if they're gonna meet the requirements. They have to meet the requirements before they can get vetted in. So there's some circumstantial things where we allow certain things, but it depends on to the committee.
So one of your goals is to reduce the recidivism. So do you have data that demonstrates, like, you know, either people that have fallen out of the program or didn't go through the program versus
graduate? When they fall out of the program, they're going back to the regular criminal justice system. As far as the, you know, have we had folks that graduated and, you know, got back into the criminal justice system, I would say we've had that happen. I don't know the specific percentage of that, but I know we've had some that actually Racine County was, I can't remember the fellow's name, but he literally graduated the program and did everything he needed to do, and that day he graduated the program, he ended up partying and he passed away from doing drugs or whatever. And that's the sad part, you know, because you've been clean and sober for so long,
right?
And then you go to a drug that you used to have a tolerance to, and you don't have that tolerance,
right?
And then that's what takes some more. But as far as the statistics, but I don't,
so I love the program. I do think that we want to look at outcomes from spend, and so to the extent that we could have actual data to demonstrate, you know, we invest in the program and it leads to this, would be great. Even the number of people that fall out, just so we kind of have that context, would be great.
Sure.
You know, there's many factors for veterans who fall out of that program. You know, they might have good intention to go through the program.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, Department of Correction, if they don't have proper supervision to supervise them for the 18 to 24 months, you know, they're not going to let them in the program because they're saying, well, this person is only a year. Supervision, even though they might need that program, might be critical to their success in the future. So they'll say, well, we don't want that program. So they fall out of the program. So when you look at the numbers, I say approximately 2 to 3 a year. Mm-hmm. It might seem like very high, but in the scheme of things, it's not, because of the factors that it's a volunteer program. And they can say, okay, I have good intention to start the program. And within a month time, they said, no, this is not for me. And they can fall out of that program. It's a great program, a great return on your investment. You know, when you think about incarceration, how much it costs to keep a person locked up,
right?
If you can turn that person around and make that person a productive person in society, where, like Oscar mentioned earlier, reunite with his family, you know, gain custody of his kids, a productive, you know, worker in paying taxes and doing all the great things. That's what we hope for. It's not always happened that way, but for the most part, that's a great outcome for that particular person.
What was that number, Andy?
$36,000 to incarcerate somebody per year.
For a year?
$36,000.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's $35 a month that the county's paying, taxpayer dollars, tax levy dollars. which I think is a small feat. Mm-hmm. And one thing about veterans, you can't just throw them into just a regular drug court, because they're dealing with combat issues, PTSD, trauma from combat. So one size won't fit all when it comes to veterans. So various factors they're dealing with in that program.
Yeah, I'm honestly not criticizing the program. I think with any program we finance, we should look at it from what are the outcomes? And if the outcomes, if we see over 10 years that the outcomes are not improving, then do we invest differently? And that, I just didn't see that, and I think it's fair to ask that. Are you at capacity, or if you had additional resources?
So right now, as far as veteran-wise?
For the program, are you at capacity, or could you handle what?
Yeah, we can handle up to 10 veterans from Kenosha County. The court as a whole, I think they can have... 25 maximum veterans. But I think...
I'm sorry, is that at once, or is that a year?
So the Veterans Treatment Court, everybody's in a different phase.
Right.
So, like right now, I could tell you we have... that's the wrong one. But right now, I think it's 13 veterans, so we're not even at capacity for the court.
Okay.
And the court is stemmed to two programs. Before, it was a high-risk, high-need. Now we're allowing veterans who are low-risk but still a high-need into the court. So two different tracks, and they're in two different tracks of supervision. So if we have high-risk, high-need veterans, we have them come to court first. We don't intermix our low-risk, high-need with our high-risk, high-need veterans. So,
Oscar, have you seen any difference because of the pandemic that we've gone through? Do you see a greater number impacted?
So during COVID, it was really interesting because a lot of our... Because you would have to drop. Like, you would have to do your sample, and everybody has to do sampling. So what we ended up doing until we could physically give samples again is they would have to wear a patch. I would say there was at least two veterans that had tampered with their patch. And then they ended up, when we brought them in, we'd have to have the grid get a sample, which they would, have to, give their sample, and obviously they ended up testing positive for drugs.
Has the number, though, increased because of COVID? The number of veterans that you see
in our court?
Yeah.
No. We've been steady. I think what we're trying to do, because we're trying to get more veterans in the court right now. During COVID, our veterans that we had in our program stayed the same, and we're still bringing veterans in. Like I could say, for our referrals, we have, and this is, we're still COVID, but Racine has we have two, and then Walworth has three. So those are the referrals to our program.
Supervisor Burke?
A couple questions. On the eligibility requirements, it talks about and is approved by the DA's office. Are there instances where the DA does not approve?
So, for Kenosha to approve to our court, sometimes that happens where they're going to end up going to, Kenosha County District Court. I mean, it all depends on also, the veteran applies and their attorney, whoever their attorney's with. So they apply, they get their, their approval, and they can always, because it's voluntary based. But yeah, there's instances where I think I've seen which I would like to see that our courts here in Kenosha vet for more veterans to come to our court. I'm not sure exactly what their drug court looks like here in Kenosha, but it seems like, that's kind of our lull for here in Kenosha. I'd like to see, I think a lot of our veterans are, going to that route. But not to say we don't have any veterans that come from Kenosha to our court, but it'd be nice to see more veterans get the availability to, at least apply.
So there's some that are eligible out there, but the TAs deny
them. I mean, I know of some veterans that could apply, but they're going to go through their own process through the, if they're going to go through drug court, and I think is there a DUI court here in Kenosha?
I'll talk a little bit about
the city
that Kenosha County have here that sometime lower the numbers of veterans who might get.
Yeah, so basically what I got the understanding out of their court is our program is offering you to come to our court for 18 to 24 months. I believe their court, if so when you're going through the process of the drug court or whatever, before you go and see the judge, they have to do XYZ like you would have to do, like treatment-wise. And if you have a lot of your treatment and everything that you're required to do before you go before the judge, that they're going to be under supervision less time. So, like, for example, 12 months. So a lot of these veterans are going to end up going to do the 12-month route rather than, you know, 18 to 24 months. So that also kind of, you know, makes it a little bit harder for, I mean, what would you do?
If I had to do 12 months versus 18 to 24,
yeah,
sure, it's a no-brainer there.
Yeah.
My other question is, it was mentioned earlier that sometimes the DOC doesn't have the available parole agents to supervise them well enough.
DOC, you want to explain for you?
It's not that they don't have the agents. It's just that they don't have enough time for supervisions. You know, so if the program is 18 months to 24 months, that person has to be on supervision 18 to 24 months. So if you have an individual who's only have supervision for 12 months, then they're not going to be probably eligible for the Veteran Treatment Court.
So we would be adding on to the work for our current agents that are in the area. We'd be adding on to their work if we added the 18 to 24 month individual.
Yeah, but no one is going to agree to that. You know, they're not going to agree to go through a process for 18 months if they only have to go for it for 12 months. Mm-hmm. And that's where you find out that a lot of them say, hey, you know, I might need the help to stay sober and drug free, but if I get out of jail card for 12 months, I'm not going to stay there for 18 or 24 months.
So I think a question to ask the district attorney's office is, of those that are going through the 12-month program, of those that are veterans, what is the recidivism rate of those? Mm-hmm. And are they committing a crime again? Because if they're committing a crime again, maybe it's important to bring to almost...
It's worth it.
Yeah, it is worth it at that point to come into the 18 to 24-month program if they're committing a crime after the 12-month period, you know?
Sure.
In the end, you're saving their time.
Right.
Yeah.
And our own.
And money, everybody's,
right. Supervisor Gully mentioned something earlier that's critical, which I don't think we have our finger on that yet, is after the program, you know, the outcome, success, the follow-up after the program, that's critical. Once the individual finished from the DOC time, they don't have nothing to do with them. So if Oscar don't call the individual up and say, hey, how you doing? I'm Oscar from Kenosha County, just trying to check up on you and see if everything's going on. But I think that structure of that program, the Veteran Treatment Court, that is not in place yet. But I think that would be critical if they can put that in place, because then you can follow aftercare to make sure they're doing all they're supposed to be doing so they don't become a repeater. Or, as Oscar mentioned, the guy graduate and then a few hours later, he'll be.
So the 43 that went through, those are all Kenosha?
No.
That was from
Is it confidential who these individuals are that went through the program?
Well, you can't release information. Private. We have to get their release of information, especially the ones who graduate from programs. You can't loosely send that information out.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
you haven't been in trouble since then, right?
Well, I mean, like, for example, I mean, the individual I was talking about, I bet he would be more than glad to come here and talk about his experience.
I think he was in the newspaper, actually, wasn't he?
I think
there was a couple that I've
seen. They've all been in the newspaper.
They all take.
But then we also have another one that I'm working with, who actually he's a graduate from our court, and we also have in our court we have peer mentors, and he's going to put his. We have it's an application process. He's going to apply to become a mentor. So went through the program, and now he's going to become a mentor and hopefully mentor our veterans and let them know, because there's things that are going to be asked of the judge, and there's a lot of times where I see it in their face. They're like asked of these tasks that they have to do, and they're like thinking to themselves, like, how am I going to do this? And, you know, to have and we have another mentor who's graduated the program and went through it, and, you know, he can, you know, from veteran to veteran, but a veteran who's gone through the program and who knows the struggles and knows, hey, it's going to be okay, and that they grow, you know, that you're going to grow from it. And, you know, I've been there too. I think it's, you know, an awesome return for him to wanting to come back. And, you know, because a lot of times some of these veterans do graduate and, hey, that's a part of my past that I want to look back on. But for them to, for, you know, some of them that graduated and want to come back and help, I think that's, you know, shows the strength of the program.
So what would we need to do to meet with District Attorney Gravely? What would we want to talk about, Supervisor Burt? The 12-month versus, to find out exactly how many have actually, because they've gone through the 12-month
I guess kind of, you got to kind of tally the data first, and you got to find out of those that went through the treatment court, which ones are veterans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of those veterans, who committed a crime after they graduated the 12-month program.
So, Ali, you're asking, is that something that you can get from District Attorney Gravely?
We can provide the data, because we have the names of people who actually petitioned to be a part of the court. Not everyone makes it to be in the court system, but we have those data that we can bounce back.
Because then we can say, what changes can we make, what enhancements, so that veterans go through a more successful program than just taking the 12 months, right?
Well, I'm just thinking outside the box.
Sure.
But, you know, there's always more than one way to skin a cat. So if the 12 months require itself, maybe the program itself can design something for a 12-month track.
Well, that, yeah.
You know, to get those individuals in the program.
Yeah.
Instead of exclude them because they don't meet the...
So it feels more equitable to them, even though...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That would be good.
Yeah.
I feel like this is awesome.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
So this is second judicial district?
Correct.
Where is it, across the street? Only a little bit across?
Across the what?
Do we have these across the state?
Yes, we do.
Everywhere? Every county? Or?
So there's I didn't put that in there. I guess I wish I would have.
Or almost every county? Or?
So, no, because there's our county and Kenosha County, Racine County, and Walworth is what makes up ours. And then they're across the state, and then the Veterans Treatment Court actually, they have them all throughout the United States. It actually started in New York, I believe.
Buffalo, New York.
Ali actually went to the training there where it started. I can't remember the number.
I think there was nine courts in the state of Wisconsin.
In the state of Wisconsin. I mean, I could look it up.
Yeah, I think you have one. The closest one to us outside of second judicial district is Milwaukee.
Yeah.
I think there's one in Madison.
Yeah.
But there's nine in the state of Wisconsin. I think up in, there's another court down there. But it was nine. It's nine in the state of Wisconsin.
And some of them are clustered like we are, where it's three.
Yeah, the counties. Yeah.
Okay. The second jurisdictional district was a model program for the state, for the success over an entire period. And I'm not sure where we stand right now, but it's a good program. They hold them accountable, which they should, and make sure that they get back on their feet. company that's a citizen society.
So if a veteran gets pulled over for a DWI and has to go to court, how does he find out about enrolling in this program?
Well, intake. So each, I guess, the county jail or whatever, they're going to ask you, are you a veteran? And they're supposed to get that information out. If you're a veteran, you might be eligible for a veteran treatment court. Contact your lawyer or whatever, and they work with the district attorney's office, and they work out some kind of deal where they can become part of the court.
Yeah, I can give you that.
Are there any other questions? Do you have more to present?
No, I could. I was going to look up that. What should you do?
I know there was a court in Brown County because we got stuck.
Yep, Brown.
And Kenosha, we visited one in Brown County to get information. To Milwaukee County, Madison. Adam Flood, what county is he from?
La Crosse.
La Crosse, there's a court in La Crosse. There was nine of them that I know of across the state of Wisconsin.
And just
after
so
when
I'm,
you,
I'm sorry.
When you find that, you can just send it to us if you'd like.
Okay. Oh, here, I got it right here.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Looks like there's...
That's right.
Oh, here, I'll just show you. This is what it is now.
I have questions.
As of 2019.
When we're asking questions, are we supposed to say Madam Chair and then ask the question?
Yeah, you are.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No,
I don't
know. That's
okay.
All right.
We've been
it's
loose.
Kinda,
we've been loose today.
Loose.
Okay. All
but,
right.
So here's, we got, so since, as of 2019, we do have 12.
Okay.
So. So that's what I got.
Supervisor Decker, did you have any other questions?
No, thank you.
Supervisor Lewis?
This refers to the second.
Did you say it costs $350 per individual?
Correct.
Per month.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or appellate court?
$35, you said, right?
$35.
A month.
Thank you.
$35. No, $350.
Oh. Per month.
I heard that.
It's $300.
Ali, you said
35. Yeah.
I didn't say no 35.
Yes, you
yes,
did.
Yeah.
Ali is recording.
Got it.
They scratched up on the record. $350.
Okay.
Not pounds or cents or whatever.
Okay.
That helps.
$150.
That makes more sense.
I've been thinking, why are we spending $35 on that?
Yeah.
We could do so much more.
My viewers just dropped off and I mentioned it.
So.
Is there anything else? Thank you very much, Oscar. This has been very enlightening.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I appreciate you guys' time. It was nice to. It's my first time meeting with you guys, and maybe no, that's not true. But I can't remember all the faces. But
yeah.
I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity here, and yeah, that's what I got.
You're welcome to come back anytime.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, we have the presentation on Foster Family Support Network. Star, are you going to be presenting?
I'm just going to introduce and set the stage for everyone, and then I'm going to pass the mic over to Susan.
Okay.
So, good evening, everyone. My name is Star Burke. I'm the social work supervisor for children with special needs. So I wear about 9 different hats in the Division of Children and Family Services, serving well over 1,000 children under my auspices and my teams. And tonight I'm wearing the hat of foster care licensor. So I'm the licensor for Kenosha County for foster parents. And I just wanted to take a few minutes to set the stage because our foster homes in Kenosha County are made up of about 191 licensed homes, of which 84 are relatives, okay? So if I'm an auntie or a grandma to someone, I can take care of my relatives and be kinship care. But out of those, about 107 people have raised their hands and said, I want to volunteer and help children in need. I'm going to wake up at 2 in the morning sometimes and take that phone call. I'm going to take some intensive urgent care needs. People in this room have done that support. We shall remain nameless. But we have great people in our community that step up to care for children and sometimes become permanent resources and adopt.
And so it's very important to Kenosha County that we aim to get to 240 homes. We've been in that aim for a couple years now, so that we can have good matches, we can have success, we can have room, less crowding, and success. And with the division, we're really working hard to retain homes. I think a couple years ago we took a look at how much turnover. It's a natural course when like a family member is taking care of a child, or as Oscar shared, when that veteran, you know, did the good work, they became sober, they were reunified with their children. That's what we want. We want children to return home to their families. And we're also wanting foster parents to continue this good work in Kenosha County. And it gets tough. It's a tough situation to support families. But in that vein, we pursued a grant with the larger Division of Children and Families of Wisconsin. So that's the state entity of our local county governance for the youth and governments here. I'll try to get you guys all on board. We pursued a grant and we're awarded it in partnership with One Hope. We applied, and through that, tonight I want to introduce Susan Wimmer, the director of the Foster Family Support Network through One Hope. And she's here to talk about our great success of this grant and how we're working hard to retain foster families in Kenosha. Susan.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Well, there's my family. Our children are adopted, as you can tell. My oldest, Stephen, and his wife, Emily, and our youngest, Daniel. And then in the picture where we're all in blue, that's when we had a foster son, the big guy that looks like a Swede. And we were also foster parents. We, at the time, were living in Arizona, and my husband was a pastor of a small church there. And Sean's grandmother came to our church, and she brought him along as a middle schooler, and he got to know us, and his home life wasn't very stable or safe or friendly. His parents were still married, but not at all together. And when it came time for us to leave, we adopted Steve as an infant from the hospital, and Sean wanted to come with us back to Illinois, and he convinced his bio parents to sign over parental rights to us, and they did. So he came with us. So I became a foster mom and adoptive mom at the same time. And that's what youth will do for you. You think, I can do it. What's the big deal? And it wasn't that great of a big deal. But, you know, when I look back on it, I think, boy, that's what youth does. You know, you look at that and go, yeah, we can do that. When we were fostering him, we had him for about 4 years. We got him through high school and he graduated, which we thought was great. When he was about, I'll say a junior in high school, he had the flu, was sick in bed, and I was sitting inside of his bed, you know, doing motherly comfort and trying to encourage him, and he got emotional, and with real emotion in his eyes and his voice, he looked at me and said, "Where were you when I was 10 years old? I needed you when I was 10. Ugh. Got to my heart, of course, I'll never forget that. You know, even at he was probably 16 years old then, even in that short amount of time, he knew that if I'd been there in his life, nurturing, safe, loving, all of those things, his life would have been really different already. And I like to tell this story when I go into churches and other places and tell about this, because there are children in Kenosha County that are thinking the same thing. Where is that safe place for me? Where can I go that somebody will be loving and kind, and I can feel safe? And back then, of course, you can tell that was a long time ago. I had no idea I would be doing this now, and it's really a cool thing that I have that experience in my background, that I can speak to that and know what that's like to be a foster parent. As Star said, we need more foster parents desperately. We need more. So maybe one of you, or spread the word. our program is that we go into, we're the bridge between Kenosha County and the foster families, and we have the partnership with Kenosha County now, and they refer foster families to us to say, sign up with them. And what we do then is when the foster family reaches out to us, we then say, what can we do to help you? I like to say that's the only time they have to ask, potentially, is will you support me? And then we monthly say, what can we do to support you? What can we do to help you? And the longer I'm doing this, the more I'm finding that's a really big deal. Because I think for most of us, what's embedded in when we ask for something is maybe we're not doing something quite well enough. And we have to ask for help. Maybe we're failing at something. And it's a big deal when we say, what can we do this month? So we connect, we're the bridge between Kenosha County and with basically churches in Kenosha County. And we've current church network, there's Journey Church, Living Light, Daybreak, Christ the King. And there's a cumulative total there, close to 4,000. And so what I do is then go into these churches, make these presentations, talk with the pastors, the elders, the leaders of the church, and ask them if they would be willing to bring this in as one of their ministries of their church to support foster families. Oftentimes we find out when a foster family says, yeah, I'd like to be supported, well, what church do you go to? If they aren't one of these churches, we will reach out to their church and say, you have a foster family that says they attend your church. Would you like to know about our program? Would you like to know, you know, what we do? And if we come in, I come in and do training, give them the structure for how to do this, how to wrap around support to a foster family so that they feel supported. As Star said, as you can imagine, fostering can be hard. It's hard work, but it's good work. And we want to keep foster families in the game. We want to keep them doing what they're doing and support them through it. And so you can see there with the foster family, we offer tutoring and mentoring, and we bring meals and we do babysitting. Whatever the family says, yeah, I think I need that this month, is what we try and provide for them. So this is a fun slide. This is, we have different businesses or just people with a special offering that they have. Some are professional, some are not. Haircuts, free haircuts for foster families. Heavenly Horses, the little guy on the horse there, is a therapeutic horse farm where they have the foster kids come as a family, and they do that therapy horse training for them, and they've offered for free to foster families 6 sessions over 3 months' time. We're in our second session of families participating, and they are just loving it. It's really been a great thing. The other slide with the kids with the blankets, this year at Christmas time, another not-for-profit in Kenosha, Comfort for a Cause, they make blankets throughout the year, and they wanted to give them to foster kids this year. And so that's what happened with that. They got their first names, and they embroidered them on there and matched, you know, appropriate fabric to age and whatnot. And so that was just a great thing. They also made handmade masks for the kids and did a gift bag. So all the children foster and the children in the home of foster homes, all of them got blankets and all of these gifts. It's just a great thing. Okay. Thanks. So our program structure, internally, I'm full-time staff. My boss, Nicole, is the full-time staff. We have part-time support volunteer who does our data for us. And then this year we were fortunate enough to have an intern. And then externally, when we go into the churches, we ask them to identify somebody to lead this there, a ministry leader that I give training to, and we set up the whole structure at their church. And we need family advocates. That's our main need. The more family advocates we have, the more foster families we can support. We assign a family advocate with the foster family. That's the person who will call the foster mom, usually. Sometimes it's the foster dad, and say, what's coming up, like right now, what's coming up in June? You have some pressure points, so anything on your agenda this month that you know of that might be a little hard, need a little extra support. We can bring in meals. Somebody come in and just be a mother's helper and help you do laundry. You know, whatever they need, we just are looking for, you tell us what would help, and we'll try and make that happen for you. And so that's the family advocate, and then they have teams of volunteers. to help then make that sort of thing happen. But the advocate is the person that's doing all the connecting with the foster family, what their needs are, and with their team of volunteers to get things done for them. So our program metrics, cumulatively from the start of the program until first quarter of 2021, we've had 65 foster children served, 37 foster families, 230 total family members, 132 volunteers, that's the light touch, level one, level two, and family advocates. And then so far we have four churches that we've launched that are in partnership with us doing that. And then the people served in as of the first quarter of this year, 2021, by age, you can see there our percentages.
So just to clarify, it's 40 individuals and then or 74%. So
yeah.
Right.
So you're bringing one to look
there.
At the data
yeah.
versus the percent, they're both
40,000, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I know.
It seems a little, but just it's 40 or considered 74%
yeah.
of the
That's right. So the vast majority of the age of the children we're serving currently are very young.
Yeah.
So that's basically what that's showing you. And then the 6 to 10-year-olds. And then the middle school, we only have one, and we only have one at the moment in high school. And so the vast majority are ones that are in diapers, actually. And we are partnering with Diaper Depot. I don't know if you've heard of them. Ruth Dyson is doing that. And so that's a great thing, too. And trying to get just diapers are expensive, right? And get them as they're fostering.
Fair question. I'll say like the zero to any of the ages, I guess. Is there anything that shows what put that child in that situation? Was it court ordered temporary placement out of their family, their home? Was it because the parents couldn't handle a child anymore and they put up for adoption?
Yeah.
Or foster care?
That's not our piece that we
okay.
handle.
That's what Ron would do.
Are you,
right?
I know,
yeah.
are you, and I have this side of my phone because I have the child welfare report up, so
okay.
you're asking what the number one reason is why kiddos go into
I guess what are the reasons, you know?
Yeah,
I
so
guess
the
it
high,
varies.
It does vary, but our highest percentage of reason is either mental health or substance, and so those kind of get, it's a little dicey because as you heard from Oscar earlier, when we look at people who have substance use disorders, it can mean that they have a mental health need,
right.
but that is our highest reason why children end up in out-of-home care.
Okay.
Did
that
answer?
Yes. I was curious about, you mentioned one high school age. Is
I
that...
I got your form, by the way.
I'm sorry?
I got your form, by the way. Thank you.
Oh, good. Thank you. is that because... Like families with younger kids that are in foster care tend to have more. It seems disproportionate to what I understood the age breakdown in foster care was, and so is that because, like, foster families that would take younger kids would have different needs, or that the needs of a high school kid would be more specialized, and you couldn't put a volunteer? What?
I think you're asking two things at once.
Yeah.
Okay.
So for my piece of it is. What we do is we support the foster family after they do all the stuff
okay.
with Ron and them, and then they are with the foster family. We come alongside and say, "What can we do to help you do
okay.
what you're doing?" So as for that, it would be which foster families have asked us to support them. So the more we can get them on board, and we're working on that.
Okay.
The more we can get a bigger spread, I would assume. That correct?
It is correct. So I just want to be clear. So one hope in the Foster Family Support Network is serving approximately the 37 foster families that have opted into this
right.
voluntary program. And of that, there's 65 children. And of the 65, there's only one or so kiddo in high school.
So that's purely coming from the breakdown of the people that have opted in.
Correct.
It could be any.
Correct.
It's not based on anything other than that's who
yeah.
signed up for it. Okay.
That's totally.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And that is fluid, as you can imagine.
Certainly.
It's just that any. So as of the end of first quarter this year, that's what we did. That's what we looked like, and that's who we served.
Good. Make sure I just get it.
And so, current impact, foster homes close for a variety of reasons, as Star's already alluded to. No longer interested in fostering. The child left foster care, they were reunified with their bio family, or the family moved. And so from 2017 to present, an average of 45 homes close annually. As of March of this year, there was a decrease in 4% in the foster homes, which is really good news. That's our goal, is to keep there from being a decrease of foster families. We want to keep them doing what they do. I think back to when I was that foster mom, and there was no family advocate calling me and saying, hey, how are you doing? Could you use some help? Now, imagine, we weren't parents ever, and we got a teenage boy, and it would have been like so wonderful for somebody to say, hey, let us take him to the movies with our family, and you guys can just not have to have him for a little bit. We didn't know what we were missing, of course, but it would have been great. And that's what we offer, is really, and it's customizable. It's to what the foster family says they would like, and whatever they ask for, we try and do it as best we can. And so it's support, it's friendship, and it's customized to the family, and it's what everything is at the invitation of the family, even the gifting. We have food boxes, farm-to-table boxes that are offered. We had one of the best things that was offered was a movie gift card for $150 to each foster family that they could rent a theater at Tinseltown. They could choose their movie. So they had this little budget. Well, it's a pretty big budget, $150. I think at the time it was about $100 to rent a theater, and then $20 for a movie that they wanted, and then extra for spending money, and they could have up to 20 people in that theater with them, and that went to every foster family in One Hope, if they wanted it. And, you know, of course everybody wanted it.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. It was pretty fantastic. So that's just really fun stuff. So our goal is 20% reduction in closures or 10 homes maintained. That's what we're always moving toward. You can go to the next slide. And so our long-term goals over a two-year period to reduce by 25% the closure of active licensed foster homes and increase by 30% the number of licensed foster homes in a two-year period. That gives us, obviously, better matching. Match kids better with the right foster families, more capacity, more that we can do, and of course results in improving the lives of the foster kids. So 2021-22 program goals, recruit 100 plus volunteers. We will easily meet that. We are just found out that we are adding two more churches to the list who are partnering with us, Emmanuel Church and Great Lakes Church. So that's really exciting and fantastic. And our goal is to support 54 foster families and the corresponding 75 to 100 foster children. Now, we can support more than that. That'd be great. My personal goal is to support every single foster family in Kenosha County that wants to be supported. And I think that's within our capacity. I think we can do that, especially as more churches come on board, more people find out about it, it grows, be great. And 10 church partnerships. So
wonderful.
Yeah. Any questions? Any other questions?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's an unfair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Because
unfair?
It's unfair.
Okay.
Because this is new, but when we first talked about the program, one of the things we recognized was a potential halo effect where these wonderful volunteers or the families in the churches, you know, gave the movie thing, and then we were like, oh, this was so much fun, maybe we should foster. And that the idea was that there would be some sort of, you're kind of almost like a field team.
Yep.
And I know it's new, but have you seen any indication that funnel, that like pipeline is at least starting right now?
Yes, it presented at Living Light Church the beginning of May. And from that, we have a foster family that's wanting to come on. I presented to Daybreak Church in February, and three people filled out the forms to become foster. From that, but that leaves me though, and that goes.
No, I just think that's.
Yeah, that's okay.
You can't.
But it's,
like, you can't. There's no use of money that would be that would achieve that. Like, it's the great benefit, and you already know you're, I think that's a great benefit of this.
And one thing we did by design in our partnership was we were very smart about our training and our volunteer, one of the volunteers, our data person, has been instrumental in this. This is actually an evidence-based model, very successful in Colorado, so this has happening nationally, where other states are leveraging some social capital and being in partnership with faith-based organizations, not new to human services. I'm sure if you guys ever listen to Google, punch up Lutheran Social Services, been around for hundreds of years. And so we're fortunate to have Journey Church behind One Hope, the nonprofit entity, partnering with us in this effort to leverage all this capital. We're seeing, you know, Carla by design asked us how should we be training, what do we need to do for background checks. So the integrity is there in this model. We're very excited for it. People are learning a lot of what foster parents have to be taught anyways. And so if they decide, I'm ready to foster, I'm ready to do this, they already have some of their pre-training done, if you will. So they're coming to us having been exposed to the community, understanding what it takes to be a foster parent, because they are held at a very high bar. And we, you know, we're leveraging a lot of that. And by the way, Susan said that a lot of people are saying, I was nervous, but now I'm okay, I want to do this. So
very good. That's
awesome. Yeah. Does anybody else have any other questions for Susan or for Star? Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
We'll be back to bother you at the board, but hopefully you'll...
It's not a bother. No. It's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other business as authorized by law? If not, is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Awesome. All right. Everyone have a good evening.
Thanks.